bum 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 bum. Welcome to Noise Cancelling Podcast. I was going to do some sort of pithy intro, but I just got excited with the following our theme song, so I decided to do that instead. Bum 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 bum. Hey, welcome to Noise Cancelling. It is the podcast that talks about tech. We pretend to know about tech. We talk to you about tech. You listen about tech forever. We have many people on the call today. Let's start with finding out who they are. Cherie, who are you? Tell the listeners.
I'm Cherie L. Smith, editor-in-chief of Laptop Mag.
James, tell people who you are.
I'm James Peckham. I'm phones editor for TechRadar.
And Jonathan, tell people who you are.
I'm John McCann, deputy editor at TechRadar.
And I am Gareth Beavis, global editor-in-chief of TechRadar. I knew you said phones editor for TechRadar because I thought I'd just go back in time 4 years. Why not? It's lovely to have you all listening with us and lovely to have you fine people on this call. Who has had the best week so far? Hands up. Cherie's hands up.
I mean, it's the start of busy season, so like I'm built for this. Like I'm built for sleepless nights and just hand wringing and just news upon news upon news. So I'm just like, feed me more. So like, yeah, I'm just a little bit of a masochist. So I'm just having the time of my life right now.
Can either of you two beat that? I mean, that's quite an intro.
Not really, to be honest.
No, life shit for us.
I know. I'm way too excited about more work.
Yeah, can't muscle that positivity at the moment.
There's so many good embargoes and news breaking and all these laptops. There's like 150 laptops getting refreshed. Listen, I'm excited.
What's the thing you're most excited for?
Well, since Tiger Lake is coming, I'm excited for all those 11th gen systems, and I want to see how Tiger Lake holds up against AMD, because I can't even say, oh, let's see how Tiger Lake holds up against Ice Lake and Comet Lake, because at this point, no one cares. So I want to see how Intel and AMD do this round, because AMD has been kicking ass this past year, so like Intel better bring it.
Why are they all called Lake?
I don't know. I've never thought to ask that question, and I've been in too many briefings. I just kind of like, eh.
I've been in charge of TechRadar for a couple of years and been working on the site for 10 before that. So they don't know much about processes, clearly. Just outed myself massively there. Well done, Gareth. Let's talk about the big question this week. So we are going to come on to this later, but Amazon Halo has turned up. I will explain why, but it feels a little bit on the creepy side with some of the way the features have been described. So the big question this week is, what's the creepiest wearable you can imagine? I'm going to go to you first, Pexy, aka James Peckham. What is the creepiest wearable you can imagine?
There are a lot of wearable meditation headsets at the moment. It feels like those could easily become, in the future, could start reading your thoughts. And I think that would be the creepiest thing possible in that sort of region. I can imagine like thought reading would become part of whether you are meditating correctly, if you see what I mean. I feel like that could be a feature that could be brought in that way. But yeah, that seems creepy to me. If not, it's Amazon Halo itself. That in itself seems creepy. I know we're going to talk about it later, but yeah, that is already scaring me a little bit.
I mean, the pressure you're saying there, like being judged on, are you meditating effectively?
Right.
Like, that's going to make you relax.
Yeah. And I feel like that might be the way that things start to go at some stage. But yeah, the meditation headset seems to be growing as a form at the moment. So yeah, I don't want it to start reading my emotions or my thoughts, basically.
What kind of things are you thinking? Why are you so
afraid? I don't think I have thoughts that I really want computers reading.
John, how about you?
I mean, I see you're creepy, and I'm going to turn that creepiness up to 11.
Oh, my.
Oh, yeah. So wearables are getting more and more focused on our health. You know, are our bodies healthy? Are we eating healthily? Are we exercising? Blah, blah, blah. So we can't be far off underwear that will be able to predict your next bowel movement. Is it a number one? Is it a number two? How long is it going to last? If we're talking number twos, we're talking consistency, floatability, size, color, you know, all of that. And and it will ping a notification to your smartphone and say, you're about to do a poo. You have 5 minutes to get to a toilet. You should be on there for roughly 4 minutes, 22 seconds. And it can also analyze what's in it and be like, it looks like a healthy poo today. Well done.
Right, I've got a lot of questions for this.
Yep.
Number one, I mean, I feel like of all the things I'm quite good at is knowing when I need a poo.
But this will tell you quality, and also it gives you an idea of amount and time.
Yeah, but I don't want a notification to say, like, you've got 5 minutes to get there. Because I'm like, yeah, I know. Like, if I'm 5 minutes away from, like, the red line of emergency, I know about it pretty well.
Yeah, but then you're kind of crowning.
Yeah, but maybe you only think you've got 1 minute. I'm not saying maybe 5 minutes.
And you know when you really need a wee, and then you're like, and you're just trying not to think of you're trying to think of anything else essentially, and like running water is the worst possible thing. If my phone then starts telling you need the toilet in the next 60 seconds, that's not really going to help me.
That's creepy, right?
Yeah, true. That is creepy. You've answered the question,
and that's winning.
I mean, I shouldn't share this on a podcast with lots of people, but hey, as a runner, that really just like it magnifies the needing the toilet process, and like you can go twice before you go for a good run and still be like desperate about an hour in.
Well, here we go. This underwear, you basically tell the app, I'm going to do a marathon in 4 hours time, and it will be constantly monitoring you and will be able to tell you whether or not you can last the marathon. There you go. Brilliant.
that's actually just helpful.
But it's helpful because it's analyzing if you need to pee or poop and then telling you all about it.
You know what? I'm going to help you, John. This would be really good for caretakers of people who can't necessarily communicate whether or not they have to go to the bathroom.
Very true.
There is how you legitimize this, because like right now, like my sphincter, I'm pretty in tune with it, and I know when I gotta go, and I know if I gotta do the turtle scuffle to get to a place. But a caretaker, like this would be really helpful for a caretaker or people.
Handshaker, that is beautiful.
I try. But yes, that is how that makes sense for what you said, John. Caretaking.
I'm gonna pitch this to Tim Cook. We're gonna get it working with HealthKit, and your physician will be updated with every single bowel movement. So when you go for your next checkup, they'll have a full log of your logs.
The only final question I've got, John, about this. I don't want to spend too much time on this because it is weird. But you say it can analyze. But you said the pants are the wearables are the pants themselves, the underwear. How do they analyze what's going on?
It's just the same way that Pexy's wearable can apparently read your mind.
All right, because I haven't gone yet. So mine is kind of going where John is going, but it's going a little bit inside. Nut up, buttercup. It's about to get real. So basically, this would be a sexual aid, and it would be for couples that are having problems with sexual release. This is a problem that happens with most women and some men, and like trying to ascertain whether or not you're going to get there or not, or what needs to be done to get you there. So it would be a little device that would be worn by a woman or someone who has a vagina, and there would be the man or whoever is engaging in the physical activity helping to get the person off would wear a ring of some sort, and it would vibrate in sync with the doodad, and as it would get closer to climax, it would vibrate faster to let them know, to give them an occur, like, okay, you've hit the jackpot. But if not, it would like start, it would like the pulse would decrease. It's like, okay, I need to switch up the tempo, I need to switch up the stroke, or what have you.
Oh yeah.
Also, there was back in the day, like there was this pair of cat ears that had like a mind reading thing on it.
Oh yeah. And they wiggled.
And like it would sense your moves and the ears would react. I love that thing so very much. I wore, oh my God, I love those. I kind of want that. And they were talking about doing a tail version of it. It was a cosplayer's dream.
I'm gonna tell you a very specific story with my wearable.
Uh-oh.
So let's call somebody person A at work. Person A at work is a big arachnophobic, and like really big arachnophobic. And they've got person B at work who, let's be honest, gives them a little bit too much attention at times. Like every time they go to the pub, they're always going to the pub as well. You know, it's always sort of like, oh, hi, you know, asking too many questions. Nothing too weird, but you're just sort of like, oh, they're always here. Person A accidentally mentions about arachnophobia at some point. Person B says, oh, I've got something for you. I can actually help you get over arachnophobia. It's this bracelet. And if you wear it, it is proven that it would actually help. Person A, for some inexplicable reason, wears that said bracelet. And later that night, their phone just starts pinging with messages where the bracelet itself has started to communicate with the phone. And it's saying, hey, put me on, smiley winky face. And it starts going, hey, time to go to sleep, smiley winky face, because the smiley winky face is always the creepiest one. And just as they're going to sleep, the bracelet itself starts to creep and to crawl. And it turns out creepy person B has made a creepy person bracelet that turns into a creepy little spider and just starts crawling all over them in the pitch black once it notices that. And is just constantly sending little winky smile emojis at the same time.
What the hell did you just say? Did you just make up a scenario where did you just do a horror movie? Is that what you did? A thriller?
A Black Mirror episode.
Yeah. Question was, what's the creepiest wearable you can imagine that you can talk about on a podcast? I've added to the end of that. And that's what I went for.
Nobody wants that creepy pasta. You see?
Nobody wants a creepy wearable.
But at least our wearables were worse. Made sense. You did a whole creepy pasta, and I kind of want to see it on that site now. Like, what the hell?
Yep, there you are. See, I win. Well done, Gareth. On to the news. What's happened this week? News and reviews. The top story this week is definitely the Samsung Galaxy Z Fold 2, because number one, foldable phones are wicked, and everyone should have one if they'd only be so much a bit more cheaper. And number two, this one looks all right. Actually, looks quite good. James, kick us off. Are we actually at the birth of foldable phones that we'll actually be using?
Potentially. The Z Fold 2 does looks like it's improved upon the Z Fold in a lot of ways. You've now got a 120Hz screen. The front screen is now a lot bigger. They've improved on the hinge. There's a variety of different little improvements there. And the price is a little bit lower. We're talking about £100, or I think it's about $100 as well. It's not cheap yet, but this is making this a little bit cheaper, and it feels like this is the first foldable you should probably consider buying. Still, it's not in the price range of many people. It's still going to not going to be useful for everyone either, in terms of the design hasn't remarkably changed in any way. But this feels like it is version 2, and it feels like this is the time that if you were looking at the Fold originally and you decided not to buy it, maybe have another look at this one.
And we've obviously got one of the early hands-on with it. Abbas in the Middle East has managed to find some time to play with it. What were the key findings from him?
Basically what I've said, really, to be honest, in terms of he enjoyed the larger front screen. Now you're only getting 256GB of storage. You got 512GB on the first generation one, and there's no microSD support. So that is a bit of an issue for some people if you're particularly a power user. But yeah, and the 120Hz refresh rate on the screen, that's something he's really enjoyed as well. We should have a full review in the next week or so.
Yay, that's cool. John, I know you do actually love a foldable phone.
I do. I very much enjoy a foldable phone, and the Fold 2 absolutely feels more like a genuine device versus the original Fold, which looked and felt very sort of first gen, almost beta. It's there and we've got it working, but not quite as polished as maybe you'd expect, especially for something which was setting you back around $2,000. Bigger front screen, slimmer bezels, slightly more refined design. That's all great. It looks much better. The bigger screen is even bigger as well. So really making the most of the ability to put a tablet display in your pocket as well. It's something that I'm really looking forward to trying out. For me, I've got a long commute, so being able to watch Netflix and Prime Video on a bigger screen really naturally without having to take an iPad out of my bag or open a laptop or something is so much easier. I've seen a lot of people use it in terms of business as well, when it comes to photo editing, when it comes to looking at spreadsheets or bigger documents on their phone. I've seen people really positively using the original Fold, and the Fold 2 is likely to be even better in that respect. It is slightly cheaper by about $100 as well than the original, which is good, but it's still extremely expensive. So for anyone other than those who have money lining their pockets, then it's really out of question price-wise for most of us. But for those who have it all and want something else to show off, it's great. But what this shows is the foldable design can be refined, it can be improved, it can be made more premium, it will hopefully, fingers crossed, be more durable as well. And that will just mean that down the line, the technology will come down lower price points. We already know that TCL is working on a more affordable foldable device, which was supposed to arrive this year. However, I'm wondering if that's now being delayed due to the global pandemic. But yeah, it's another positive step in the foldable phone saga, but it's still going to be a while before we're seeing 500 sort of price point devices.
And Cherie, do you have any interest in foldable phones, or are they just nonsense to you? I can never tell which way you're going to go.
In the spirit of loving big phones, I'm all about this. I do worry about the overall durability of said phones with the hinges and the creases, and the it's a lot more moving parts than we're used to, and the wear and tear that an average smartphone gets, I worry about foldable phones. That's my only concern with it, but bigger, I'm never going to say no to a bigger screen.
And which would you be, is it the Galaxy Fold 2 that you care about the most, or are you like the Huawei Mate X, which hopefully a lot of our listeners have understood, which is the one that doesn't fold out like a book, that sort of folds back from round from the back, basically. So you look at the front screen, it just folds from the back to make it bigger, rather than being a screen on the front, and then you open it to an inside screen with a Fold 2 version.
If I have to choose from those, I'll go with the Fold 2. I was actually pretty fond of LG's take on dual screens, the ThinQ, because you could actually detach and attach the phone, and you would just get a second display when you wanted it, and when you didn't, you just leave it where it was.
No, it was so annoying. It's such a bad anything. It's like, you know, the Surface Duo as well. It's like, you know, anything that gets in the way of just a full, beautiful fold experience, to me, is just not okay.
Yes, yes, yes. I get that. But again, back to that durability piece.
Just look after it.
Listen, I have a fold. My Note 8 is 3 years old. It's only got some scratches on it. I can't say the same for everyone. People are just clumsy, and people like to do things like put phones in their back pockets and then sit on them. People are terrible to their phones.
Wait, you can do that now, right? I thought that was fine after the whole bending iPhone 6, whichever one, 6 Plus. People can do that now because everyone made their phones rigid.
No,
yeah,
don't
yeah,
do it.
Definitely.
People are just horrible to their phones, and when you're talking about the money that you have to spend right now for foldables, I that's why I like the LG. It's like, I'll have a dual screen when I want one. When I don't, I'll put it away.
Fine. Okay. Well, in terms of, you know, being thrifty and make sure you look after stuff, we have got, you know, around the world, people are heading back to school right now. They're looking to find a way to improve their experience. Whether we should be going back to school right now is a very hot topic, and we'll leave that for another podcast. But if you are, you need bits and pieces to help you do so. And Cherie, you've been doing some advice for helping people find the right laptop, right? Given the fact you are editor of Laptop Mag, you should know your shit.
Yeah, I mean, I like to think I do, but, you know, I also live life by the seat of my pants. But what I can tell people that are going back to school, whether they are actually doing in-person lessons or doing remote learning, you need to choose the right laptop. Some things to consider. Don't go for the most expensive deal, especially if you're shopping for a kid that's under 10, actually under 15. I wouldn't spend more than $500 on that. And if the younger the kid is, the less I'm going to spend. Durability is a huge thing. Kids are clumsy. Kids will spill. Kids will drop. Like, that laptop will go through hell. You want to make sure that it can at least last a school year or two. And with that said, think about the future. Don't cheap out on the Core i3 or the Ryzen 3 or the Intel Celeron. Go for at least Core i5, Ryzen 5, because that should be able to carry you through 2 to 3 years, or 4 if you play your cards right. Wait, if you are doing in-person lessons and you have to go from class to class, don't get a chunky boy. I love my chunky boys, but that's not something you want to be lugging around with your books. Are kids today still using, like, physical books? I don't even know. Like our college, like, I know I'm hearing that colleges are still scamming kids with books, but are those actual physical books, or are they virtual books?
I like how you say scamming kids with books, like that real practice of giving them stuff to learn from. Ah, dicks.
No, the college scam of, hey, this professor wrote this book and it's part of their course syllabus.
Fair enough, yeah.
And you have to pay $300 for this book. And, oh, you can't use the old one because they put new stuff in there. And they're not going to tell you what page it's on because you need to buy their book. That scam. Like, are professors still doing that? They still doing that to the kids?
So, John, do you think professors are scamming students?
Huh. Well, that is an interesting thing. It's not the professors. It's the people running these educational institutes who are lining their pockets with tuition fees while taking students for a ride and taking advantage of their position of having to be forced through a higher education system into jobs which are not paying as much as the people lining their pockets were getting paid when they left the university, which they didn't pay for. So there is a interesting political and moral question around the whole higher education system and the fees around it.
I did not see this coming from John. That's the most activist thing I've ever heard of. Clearly cares. Well, thank you, Cherie. I think we've all learned that basically, like phones, don't break stuff.
But like they're making kids as young as kindergarten sit in front of a laptop. So are you really going to give a 5 or 6? Yeah, no. hey kid, don't break this. What you mean? Don't push it off the desk. You mean don't spill juice on it? Yeah, no, that's going
to
happen.
But you'd give him a Chromebook because you hate Chromebooks, so you'd be fine with that. You'd love to see it happen.
I mean, I hate to see it. Like, as much as I detest Chromebooks, I hate to see any piece of tech bite it that way. So I'm really glad that Chromebooks are, like, especially education-based Chromebooks have that built-in durability. Like, yeah, they're a little ugly, but they have those thick chassis and the spill-proof keyboard, so it can take a beating.
BlackBerry phones, they're back. John, say words about that.
Well, yeah, BlackBerry phones are coming back, or at least one BlackBerry phone in a BlackBerry 5G guise, with a QWERTY keyboard, coming to a store maybe near you, but maybe quite far away because not many people will sell them these days. Previous BlackBerry phones, which were running Android with QWERTY keyboards, were being made by TCL, who no longer make those. A new company called Onward Mobility has picked up the license from actual BlackBerry to make phones with the BlackBerry name on them. And they have confirmed we will get a 5G BlackBerry. And we thought, who cares? And we wrote about it, and it turns out loads of you care. Why do you care? Not quite clear. I thought we'd got over the whole QWERTY keyboard stuff, but yeah, we're still here and people are still reading about it, and I'm just a bit confused, honestly.
Well, but do you know what, though? It is still better to type on the QWERTY keyboard. It's the same way that people still lust after books. You know, there is tactility. People still like tactility. You know, they like being able to touch things and feel things and, you know, give people spider bracelets and stuff.
Everything but that last point. back in the day, they used to have fastest texter contest, and it was always with like a BlackBerry or a... I don't know if I like your tone with that. Or with some type of physical keyboard, and you would see these kids just blistering out text. There's something to be said for a physical keyboard. Like when I hung on to my Palm until the wheels fell off of that thing. My last Palm was a Palm Pre, and you couldn't tell me, could not tell me that life was better without a physical keyboard. But I had, like, someone stole my Palm Pre, and then Sprint was no longer, because I was still, this is when Sprint was good. Sprint had no more Palm Pre's, and I was forced to switch over to Android, and I have not looked back since. Thank you, HTC Evo 4.
I do love the Palm Pre because, again, you can cut cheese with it, literally. In America, that means something different to England, but you can slice a piece of cheese, get how sharp the edge of that thing was on the keyboard. But it was also just a brilliant, brilliant phone. You can, it's true. Look it up on the internet. But it was a brilliant phone for so many reasons. It was a true iPhone rifle that never really got going. It was, you know, pull one out for the Palm Pre. But the keyboard wasn't the best. BlackBerry keyboards were genuinely wonderful in terms of being able to text on them properly. You know, you could do fastest texting when it came to, say, a Nokia phone with, you know, the predictive text and all that kind of stuff. But BlackBerry phones, you could really rattle up a good few, you know, words per minute. And I think people do miss that still.
I guess my biggest worry here is that people are going to get excited about it and then it goes away pretty quickly. TCL really tried with the BlackBerry brand and it gave a host of devices, some with keyboards, some without keyboards, but it obviously struggled to make them a success, or the need for out there, the fans who are remaining are passionate, but they're quite small, which will make it difficult to sustain a business around this thing. So part of my worry is people are going to get excited about it coming back, and then within a year, 18 months, maybe it goes away again if not enough people actually follow through and buy.
Right, before we move on to the news blast, where we're going to have Cherie trying to pick herself up the league table, we do have to talk about the thing we talked about at the top of the show, which is the Amazon Halo. And John, you said in the production meeting, it's listening to you all the time and telling you if you're being... I'll let you finish.
Well, one of the features on the Halo is that it can detect your tone as you speak to people, and then we'll let you know if you're being lovely and delightful or a bit of a bitch to people. So, which is, okay, if you need to be told that your tone is wrong, then, I mean, you've probably got bigger problems than a wearable that potentially is just listening to everything that you say. But it is a slightly strange feature. Maybe it's going to be used in business settings for media training. I don't know. Oh, you're sounding too aggressive in response to that answer. Try and mellow out a bit more. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how they set it. But the information on it at the moment is quite limited. So all we know is it will be able to listen. There will be a function where it looks like it will listen at all times and constantly monitor your tone, your speech, and then give you a report basically on, oh, what a lovely speaker person you are, or no, you're not very nice. So at the moment, sounds creepy.
I think I don't like to you know, be a too apologist for big brands, because I think they've got enough positivity flowing their way. But it is important to say with the Halo that it's something that you can turn off, and also that all the stuff is not actually recorded anywhere. It's just analysed and then deleted. That's what Amazon claims, obviously, right now. We've heard, you know, with multiple brands in the past that sometimes they forget to delete things. But of course, we should take Amazon at face value with that. And the idea being for this listening is that one can track energy and positivity, so that if you are, like I said, sounding too negative, it can help you just learn a bit more about your body. And there are lots of important things with this. I'm not sure how well they can do this, but you can measure your body composition, body fat percentage, use it to make kind of like a 3D digital model of yourself, so you can properly see how fit you really are, and stuff like this. To me, is really good to have that more in-depth look at your fitness. But there is no way to not be creepy when you can have an option to listen to you all the time. Although I still don't think in terms of creepy anything will beat Samsung's accidental advert for the Galaxy S4, which is like, it watches you when you sleep. Yeah, well, because the advert got pulled and changed quite quickly, because it was trying to say, you know, we watch to see when your eyes shut so we can turn off the screen so you don't. And it was a nice advert at the time, where it was sort of like someone was slowly drifting off to like a relaxed slumber, and the phone just shut itself down because it saw that their eyes had gone shut. But it was like, we watch you when you sleep. It was like, oh dear Samsung, that's not a way to go.
You know what I think of when I hear this concept for the Halo? I think of this. You'd be a lot prettier if you smiled. That's what it makes me think of. Like, why are you telling me that I'm, oh, your mood is bad. You need to pep up. Like, that. It's like a neck beard. Like, you should smile. You're so much prettier. Also, this is how we end up with equilibrium, where we're all taking the emotionalist pills because there's too much emotion in the world. I don't need all of that. Mind your business, Amazon.
I feel like when you said it like that, with the kind of word, smile more, it made me think of my spider wrist bracelet again. I'm like, this is a bit too close. I don't like it.
Yes, that's exactly how creepy this is.
Well, if you are interested in this, and to be fair, you should check it out. There are more features to it than just, like I said, listening to all the time. But you do have to pay for it. So it's $399 per month, because it's only available in the US right now. And it is a trial. And it is important to look at this as something that's just a trial device that may never come to full fruition. You know, we've seen Amazon do this with a few things in the past. There was the Ring as well. Sometimes everything doesn't actually make it into the real world because people don't want it. Let's be honest, this is possibly one of those things, but who knows? Maybe everyone will want to have full body tracking, 3D scanning, monitoring. Are you listening to me all the time? Hey. Right, so as we come to the time where we feel like we could take a lovely break, we shall do that. But then after that, we're coming back to find out if Cherie can make it through the news blast with more than four. Come back after this.
Don't get your hopes up.
And we are back. Cherie, how are you feeling?
We'll see how we're going to do.
Because this is the news blast. For those irregular listeners, are there such a thing? You may not know what this is, but it's a game that we play where while we do talk about the really cool and exciting things in the tech world, there's a lot going on. It's a whole week that goes past when we don't speak to you, our lovely listeners. So we try and get as much information to you in a minute as we can do. So right now I'm going to set the timer and Cherie's got to try and tell us as many news stories in a minute, and they have to be fully well explained. So Cherie, are you ready?
Let's do this thing.
3, 2, 1, go.
Ratchet & Clank developers are really excited about the PS5 because it is bringing spatial audio and SSDs to the mix. The OnePlus 8 has been spotted at the Android 11 developer show, and it has a little bit of tweaks, nothing really to get excited about, but, you know, new OnePlus. Walmart is revealing a new membership program called Walmart Prime. It is going after Amazon Prime. That will be launching sometime in September. iPhone stuff, well, iStuff, so pads, phones, 12, AirPod Studio, all that has been confirmed in a Bloomberg report. It will be coming very, very soon. The LG Wing, it finally gets a release date. So it gets a reveal date. We're going to see it 9/14, and we're going to learn more about this weird, weird phone. The Apple Watch 6 gets a bunch of patents, including Touch ID, gesture control, and a few other cool things. NVIDIA RTX 3000.
Stop.
I made it. I did. I beat my best.
You did beat it. What do you think you got?
I think I got 6.
You did get 6. A couple of Stuart's inquiries, just to make sure we're through. Walmart Plus, not Walmart Prime, because I think that Amazon Prime may get a bit pissed if Walmart came out with Walmart Prime.
I mean, I feel like, why should Walmart care? But, like, eh.
True. And it was the OnePlus 8T that was shown off it as a developer preview. But I feel like both of those can go through. So, yeah, you got 6.
Yay!
Nice work.
Right, Cherie, can you take us through to our favourite section of the week? What is it?
Unpopular opinions, let your hate unfurl. I'm tired of video game companies charging me exorbitant amounts of money. Stop and give me the whole game. Unpopular opinions.
Woo! I never know if I like the fact that you tell people what's going to happen in the unpopular opinions. Like, giving away the secret sauce.
Yeah, no, but, like, for real, like, I am tired of microtransactions. Like, I guess I'm okay with DLC, I guess. I don't know. I still feel a little salty about that. But microtransactions gotta go. Like, I, like, to learn that this new Avengers game, which I had, like, Square Enix was kind enough to send me a big old deluxe box with a cat statue and everything, and I'm excited to play the game. I am not excited about potentially having to fork out more money to customize my Avenger or to get them power-ups. Like, just let me earn that like you would in a regular game. Don't make me come out of my pocket for it.
And what was it that pushed you into this absolute level of anger?
Don't nickel and dime me while I'm playing the game. Like, hey, if you want to unlock this power, pay us $1.99. Don't do that. Just let me beat up a bunch of baddies like the old days and earn my powers. Don't cheapen the experience. Don't let people buy it. Like, I don't like it.
But I feel like it's unfair that you're getting annoyed at developers when it's our fault this has happened. You know, we, you know, the society, you know, if someone says to you this app costs £10 or $10, people are like, what is it made of gold? I'm not going to spend that much money on stuff like that. I want the app to be £1.50 or, you know, $1.99 or what have you. And then developers can't really afford to make games on that. So they have to find a way to get some more cash in. And then from there, we've built a whole system where, you know, Apple makes some money off each thing that you do with transactions. Let's hear it for Epic at the moment, what they're going to be talking about with the same kind of thing. And making sure that there's actually a revenue stream coming in is what developers have to do if they're going to make these cool games.
Yeah, yes. Okay. We, the consumers, are shite people. That's fine. But I still don't, that doesn't make me like the system any more or any less. Like, I mean, I can deal with DLC if you're giving me a really good experience. Like, okay, Mortal Kombat 11 DLC, that was some great DLC, and I was happy to pay that extra money for it. But the idea of being in game and you need to pay for real money for guns and customizations and piecemeal, I'll never be okay with it.
I never mind the microtransactions where if you can do it with skill, you'll get there. But if you want to speed things along and cheat, you can pay for it. I'm like, you know what? Fine, go for it. I don't mind the fact that if there's a way to do it, you know, to sidestep things, like you can just skip a level if you pay money or whatever. That's someone's choice and they can do it. What I really hate is I picked up Angry Birds 2 a little while ago to see if I never actually played the new one. You know, it's 5 years old right now, but just wondered if it was any better. And it is full of like pushing you to spend more money and to find, you know, buy new things, get more apples, whatever, feed your bird. I'm like, fucking hell. Like, I just wanted to fling birds at things. And the thing that annoyed me the most about that was there was every day they sort of inspired you to fill your chest by doing all these challenges. And one of them you couldn't do unless you'd paid the money. And I was like, that's chonky behavior. But equally, there's this thing that I'm using, you know, 10, 20 minutes a day and not paying a cent for. So where do they make money?
I mean, there's a very different, I think there's a big difference between mobile games, which is what you're talking about, Gareth, and console and computing games, which is what Sherry talked about. Like, this Avenger game is $60 straight up. Like, it's not a free game, like your Fortnite or your PUBG, which is given away for free to start with, which, okay, if you've given away the game for free and then you're making money through microtransactions on a console, okay, I can probably get behind that. But if I'm having to pay $60 for a brand new game, and then to unlock everything, I have to pay further money, having already outlaid $60 up front. That ain't cool.
Yeah, I agree with that. That is absolutely true. Like, if there's an outlay to start with, then that should be it. Game done, basically. I mean, DLC, as we all know, the greatest DLC was for Burnout Paradise City when they unlocked the Surf Island, which was obviously huge, huge in that game. But otherwise, paying more money for things beyond the things that matter to the game and allowing you to play it it's just ridiculous. I'm on board now. I had misinterpreted the question originally, so I'm now behind you, Cherie, and I hate it too.
Yeah, I was very confused. I'm like, you're defending micro? I was very confused.
I mean, I like microtransactions in the theory of like one day in the future, if we had that kind of pervasive payment system, you know, like a wearable that was a spider but also could pay for things whenever you were nearby.
If you mention that spider one more freaking time, I swear I'm going to find a way to leap through the screen.
I think we need to coin a new term, because microtransactions is hugely misleading. Like, micro, oh, that must mean they're all really small. But here I am on Clash Royale. And here's a microtransaction for £49. It's just like, oh, here's a microtransaction for £100. It's just like, there's nothing micro about that transaction. That's £100. Like, I could buy two console games for that. Like,
what do you get for £100?
Some gems. 14,000 gems. It just doesn't... I know. But
that sounds good value.
If the microtransaction... We need a cap. Like NFL, you've got salary caps for the players. In football in Europe, you've got some salary caps coming in. You need microtransaction caps. Apps and games shouldn't be going, oh, you can buy this for £100. Where has the scale of worth gone? Like, it's gone a bit wild. And with so many of these games aimed towards teens and children, it is getting increasingly unfair as well. So, yeah. Microtransactions, bad. Big transactions, big, scary, creepy transactions, they should be called.
Well, what about, I mean, finally on this point, what about subscription services instead? So maybe you don't pay as much for the game up front, but you pay a subscription for as long as you want to do it and you get access to all the stuff on it.
I'm glad you brought that up, because subscription services can go away as well. There's only one game I want to play on Apple Arcade, and I can't get it unless I subscribe to Apple Arcade. And I'm not paying £6 a month just to play one game. It's ridiculous. Let me buy Mini Motorways up front and I'll go away and play it. I do not want to pay monthly for... looking at Apple Arcade, there's only very few games that I'd actually want to play. So the subscription model is difficult.
But wouldn't you want to like explore the world, find another one games to play, like the idea being it's beautiful, there are no microtransactions? That cap's there for you, John.
It is a microtransaction every month because I only want to play one of the games.
also reminded me as well, finally on this point, do you remember the I Am Rich app when the App Store first came out? Which is basically you could pay £1,000 or $1,000 to have this app that just literally showed you a picture of a gem. It was called I Am Rich, and it came out, like I said, when the App Store was first done. And literally all it said was, I am rich. That was it. I am rich. I deserve it. I am good, healthy, and successful. And deserve was spelled D-E-S-E-R-V. And the application was described as a work of art with no hidden function at all, the only purpose to show other people they're able to afford it. Yeah. Eight people bought it, at least one of whom claimed to do it earnestly.
At least they're upfront about it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's brilliant. So eight people bought it. The developer got $5,600, and Apple got $2,400. But the developers say he did refund two purchases, and he was happy not to have dissatisfied customers. So I think that's the ultimate microtransaction, because you don't get anything for it, and it's well expensive.
He would have made a lot more money if it was just $100.
Maybe. I don't know, but like, surely it's an exorbitant thing. I think he made more money if it made it $10,000.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, just one person would have made him more money.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Right, I think that's all the time we've got now, because we have busy lives. Let's be honest, very busy lives. So thank you, everybody, for a lovely podcast again. Cherie, have you enjoyed it?
As always, yes.
Right, Pexy, have you enjoyed yourself?
I have.
John, how about you?
I've had a good time, but, you know, there were some somber points in that. You know, universities taking people for a ride, microtransactions being big, ugly, creepy transactions. But apart from that, it's been great.
Cherie, how can people contact you as ever?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at MissSmith11. That is M-I-S-S Smith 11. And of course, check out Laptop Mag on Twitter and Facebook, and Laptop in the past, Laptop now, Laptop forever. And we're always looking for people to pitch. So pitch us and just read and get ready for the flow of notebooks that are coming. There's 150 coming, and we're going to be there for every single release.
Are you actually going to review 150 notebooks?
We review 150, at least 150 laptops a year.
Okay, but not like in the next 3 weeks.
Not in the next 3 weeks, but we're going to be like, laptop coming, you're going to see Laptop Mag.
Pexy, how many phones are you pledging to review in the next year?
Oh, in the next year, at least five. At least five. Probably not 150.
Gareth's face, though.
I'm setting my targets high this year, at least five. I'm at JamesRWP on Twitter.
And what does that stand for?
My name.
Really wealthy person.
I feel like the listeners deserve a behind-the-scenes look.
Maybe when we get to a year of doing these podcasts.
And John, how about you?
You can hit me on Twitter at JJ McCann, and you can hit me on Instagram, JohnBM McCann, if you like looking at cars that I'm driving.
And I have been Gareth Beavis. I'm going to continue to do that. And I am Super Beav on Twitter. Find me on there. And also at Tech Radar for all your technology pleasure. We do all that stuff. We'll tell you about Amazon Halo. We'll tell you about the Remarkable 2 tablet, which we never got round to. But please read that review, because it's written by a man who... an unflinchingly passionate love for a tablet that he describes as not very good in many ways, but still loves. So please read that if you can do. It's a lovely review. And do get in contact. We're available on Twitter. We're available, like I said, on Facebook. Wherever you want to get in contact, we want to hear from you. So thank you very much for listening. This has been the Noise Cancelling Podcast. It's one of the Audioboom originals. If you did enjoy it, please do like and subscribe. Please subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your pods. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes. 3-star review if you feel like it's been sort of middling. Just don't bother with a 1-star. And we'll speak to you again soon. Thanks very much. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.